Welcome to Strengthen, a podcast dedicated to inspiring you to become your strongest self. I am your host, Gabby Barreto, a registered dietitian and personal trainer with the mission of empowering you to become the best version of yourself yet. So let's get stronger together. Welcome back to Strengthen this season, fall 2023. We're back. And my focus this season is really going to be on looking at women's health, specifically diving even more deeper into women's health, hormones, and a lot of the misconceptions around it, but greatly linking it to disordered eating, eating disorders, and what some of those impacts of, you know, under eating are. I've spoken a lot about it in many of my previous podcasts. It's a really big part of my work these days. These days I've been working a lot more, even deeper, with eating disorders, women with eating disorders, teens with eating disorders, and athletes with eating disorders or disordered eating. I kind of put those two terms together. We look at eating disorders again as more of the clinical, diagnosed versus disordered eating, which is, you know, maybe it's not a, I don't even want to use the word full-blown eating disorder, but maybe it's not clinically diagnosed as like a full eating disorder, but definitely has symptoms of eating disorders in there. And I think I'll even go into an episode one day this season that really talks about all the different kinds of eating disorders, differences between disordered eating and eating disorders. And definitely want to dive even more into the topics of, you know, toxic fitness culture, toxic diet culture, and its impacts of all this. I've spoken a lot about it, but there's even more to dive into. I even recently did a podcast with JOMA, which is the Jewish Orthodox Women's Medical Association, with Dr. Elisa Minkin. And we talked a lot about toxic fitness culture. I feel like I went on a tangent even more about, relative energy deficiency in sport, or, you know, the impacts of having low energy availability or low intake, and exercising on it. But also spoke a lot about like the toxic nature and the toxic sides of the fitness industry. Well, that's not my topic today. Those are some topics that I will be diving even more into, but a lot of things will, as always, overlap, may feel repetitive, but I don't feel they're repetitive. I feel they're really important to continue to talk about and talk about even more and even louder. But today's topic, I want to talk about the almond mom. Now, several months ago on my Instagram, if you follow me there, I spoke a lot about the almond mom. I spoke a lot about what is the almond mom and how it's impacting, you know, children's development, and also like overall society. On social media, it's been kind of looked at as like a joke about like the almond mom, but the almond mom actually has some serious impacts on child development. So first I want to talk about what is the almond mom? So this is kind of like the phenomenon of the almond mom, but basically if you've heard the term before, it's a mom with an unhealthy obsession with thinness, dieting, and exercise, who projects that onto their own children and tries to get their own children wrapped up in their own obsession with being thin or smaller or dieting. These quote unquote almond moms, they're so wrapped up and tied into diet culture that generally they can't even see it. They might not even recognize it. A lot of people that are wrapped up in diet culture don't see it until maybe it becomes a problem, or maybe they realize it, or maybe they, you know, are exposed to anti-diet culture movement. I certainly was wrapped up in diet culture until I got exposed to anti-diet culture movement. Like I didn't even really see a lot of it, or I didn't think that it was an issue until I was exposed to anti-diet culture movement, which I love. But these people can't generally, you know, see it, or even if they did, they might not think it's anything wrong or anything so serious. Like, what's so wrong with like not eating enough on a day-to-day basis. What's so wrong with eating 1,000 calories? As if you follow me, or maybe if this is your first time here, welcome. It is problematic. I've done a whole podcast episode talking about the impacts of, you know, under eating and under fueling on women's health. I mean, even men's health. I don't talk so much about men's health, but that could also be another episode because it is also something that I am working with, you know, males under eating as well. I have worked with and am working with currently. And so under eating just has so many negative impacts to physical, mental, emotional health that really are just so these behaviors that, you know, lead to under eating are so deeply tied and like normalized as like dieting or, you know, just weight loss. But so many of these behaviors are normalized. And I was speaking with a client the other day and we were talking about some of her behaviors. And I brought up like, hey, you know, some of the behaviors that you look at as like, this is part of my eating disorder, such as like, you know, wanting to get like the diet version or wanting to get the sugar-free version or wanting to, you know, cut back calories and swap out like half and half in your coffee for skim milk, which for some people be like, well, those are just healthy choices. For somebody with, you know, an eating disorder or disordered eating who is constantly restricting and holding back, some of those behaviors are actually for them are really not healthy for them mentally or maybe even physically if they are under eating to make. But so many of those behaviors are very, very normalized. And for some people, they are not problematic. But for somebody with an eating disorder who is restrictive, it is. But getting back to the almond mom, it's not really a phenomenon. It's something that's been kind of like going on and that many of us, especially it's a very millennial thing to talk about, but many of us millennials, you know, now growing up and now becoming moms or just getting older and realizing that diet culture has been such a deep part of our existence and our lives. And I remember myself, like, I know to this day how many points on Weight Watchers, you know, whatever version of Weight Watchers was going on at the time, was a cup of lo mein. I remember I loved lo mein. I still love lo mein to this day. And I remember looking at the Weight Watchers book because that was in my house. And I remember looking up all my favorite foods and being like, oh my gosh, lo mein is X amount of points. And I was like, I had to hold myself back from eating lo mein. And that's kind of like part of where my restriction for myself even came from. And so some of these behaviors and things that people may look at as like normal or just like dieting can and has and will in many cases lead to disordered eating. And so when we look at the almond mom who is just so obsessed and deeply ingrained in this, it is problematic when we have some of these disordered or dieting behaviors, which are really interchangeable. There's really an interchangeable term, can have lasting effects on their kids. And so I have run into many almond moms in my career, and I will run into countless almond moms in my career, and that's okay. And this episode and what I'm talking about is in no way to hate or shame them or tell them that they're wrong and that they're, you know, horrible or anything, because they're not. A lot of the almond moms were brought up to be that way, and that society was really set up, and that this diet culture, like lifestyle that they grew up in, really like just groomed them to be that way. It groomed many of us to be the way that we are today in terms of our relationships with food and exercise. And so I never look at someone and be like, oh my gosh, she's such a horrible almond mom. Like, no, I don't look at them like that. It's just a product of our diet culture. And that's really the only way to put it. And some people get help, some people get better, some people grow out of it, and some people don't. And that's just the vicious cycle of dieting and obsession with thinness and being smaller. And, you know, for some people, it does take their children to like point things out and to, you know, talk more about this, because in that generation, it really, you know, this stuff really wasn't talked about the way it is today. And it's wonderful that we have this, you know, anti-diet culture movement and that many of us are not trying to live in disordered eating habits anymore. But, you know, if you or you find someone you know, has these almond mom tendencies, it's really hard not to look at the world that we live in and the expectations that women have on themselves and the expectations that society has on women and our bodies for people not to end up this way. And so I always want to like preface that with so many things that I talk about in my podcast, on my Instagram, on any of my platforms, that like this is not like shame on you. This is like you're just a product of diet culture, just the same way I am, as the same way many other people are. And no one is putting any kind of personal, or at least I am not putting any personal blame or responsibility on the individual. So now when we look at the term Almond Mom itself, like where does the term Almond Mom even come from? So the term Almond Mom came from a mother on not even the internet, and reality TV, The Real Housewives, right? Bella and Gigi Hadid's mom. That is the wonderful Yolanda Hadid, who was on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. To all my Real Housewives people out there, I still do love that show. But she is a former model. Obviously, both of her daughters are models. And the term Almond Mom came from a clip of her telling her daughters that when they're hungry, that they should just eat a single almond. And it's a funny joke, and but it has like serious implications. You know, the term Almond Mom and being influenced by, you know, these kinds of thoughts and behaviors. And if you like kind of like can recall growing up, we have, maybe many of us can identify with some of these like things or terms that we may have heard growing up, which is like, if you're hungry, you're probably thirsty, drink some water. Like that was a very common thing that I heard growing up, that was said growing up, that was like very made popular. So like I'm drinking water now, but like I'm drinking water because I need to drink a certain amount of water a day, but like not to like put down any kind of hunger. But that was something that was very common that was said, or like something very, very common I heard a lot, like whether it was like even from my own mom or like just like in movies, like a lot of these things we heard in like movies or TV shows, and like you look back and you're like, oh my God, like we talked about that, like that was being said, like it was cray. But one of them was like, walk it off, right? Like we're just gonna like walk off this meal, or like we'll walk this off later as you're like eating like a slice of pizza. Oh, I gotta walk this off. Like you're gonna like go and like hot girl walk off a slice of pizza. Like, okay, we don't need to walk off every single calorie, like alluding to like the idea that like we're going to walk off a meal that was like higher in calories, like putting any kind of more shame or guilt or remorse to like eating something like a slice of pizza. Another one I heard a lot was like, or that it's common, like a moment on the lips, forever on the hips, like eating a piece of chocolate. It's only a moment in your mouth, but the weight gain from it is going to forever sit on your hips, which like, even if we look at the idea of energy balance, like from a, you know, from a biochemical perspective of like metabolism and how it works, like that doesn't even like make sense. Like one piece of chocolate is not just going to go, like the calories from it is just not going to go and sit on your hips forever. Like unless you were forever in a calorie surplus. And it's just like these kinds of things that were like said to us, or just commonly said in society and like very, very normalized, that just like put in this idea that like we always needed to equate like food and what we're eating to like being like gaining weight. And like that gaining weight was like the worst thing that could ever happen to us, especially as women. Like these are very like things that were very commonly said to women. But we know reality, it's not. And if we're looking at like some of the other behaviors, like commonly like associated with like the term Almond Mom, is like obsessive weight control behaviors, like eating very little. It is so common for me to hear from women, even still to this day in 2023, fall 2023, that like an 1,100 calorie diet is like acceptable, and that is like the norm, and is like the only way that women can like lose weight is by eating like as little as possible. There's even like these diets that like tell women to eat 800 calories. There was even a supermodel, I forgot which one it was, it might come to me, who like posted and like bragged about it in like a women's health magazine that like she eats 800 at most, like she eats at most 800 calories a day to maintain her like figure, and she's like thin and gorgeous and like very societally beautiful. I forgot which model it was. But it's like this stuff still exists to this day. And like we think like should be a thing of the past, but then you have like Women's Health Magazine, and Women's Health Magazine, guys, is hands down the worst with this stuff. Yet they have like a woman named Aubrey Gordon, like who writes for them and like tries to push an anti, like an anti-diet culture agenda within their magazine. Yet we have like articles like that being posted online. Maybe it was Women's Health. Maybe it was like another one. Maybe it was like Mind Body Green or something along those lines of like not great publications for women. But like eating very little, those low calorie diets, skipping meals. You know, I was having a conversation with one of my clients too, like just today, about like, you know, like how normalized it has been to like for like people to like skip meals because they're busy. And like for her eating disorder, that's like really dangerous because she can like totally normalize the idea of like skipping a meal. But then like if she skips a meal, like this girl needs cows, like she needs to be eating. But it's been like so normalized. Again, like another thing normalized, like ignoring hunger, like ignoring hunger cues. One of the first things I like to work on with people, you know, not one of the first, I apologize. Like one of the things I like to work on with people, which may take a little bit of time, is like normalizing like having hunger cues. What are your hunger cues? Like, can we tap into them? Can we start to recognize them? And can we start to honor them? And can we start to like accept them and treat them with respect and eat when they come? But, you know, ignoring hunger, letting it, quote unquote, letting, that's another one, letting your hunger pass, right? Another thing is like glamorizing how little they ate, right? Like, or, you know, saying like, oh, all I had today was like a banana and a cup of coffee. And it's like 2 p.m. It's 2 p.m. You had a banana and a cup of coffee. Like there is no award going out to anybody who ate a banana and a cup of coffee by 2 p.m. To me, that's like looking at my clients with eating disorders and being like, okay, like that's behaviors that we need to change. So, and that we need to work on, because a banana, which is like what, like 100 calories, maybe like a big one, like 30 grams of carbs, like by 2 p.m., I'm not handing out awards to anybody who eats as little calories as possible. Like, oh, I'll be good with just some chicken and veggies. That's another one. So there's these like, articles being written out there about like these very small and skinny, like famous people, like Kelly Ripa is one of them that is being written about. Like there's a lot of Peloton instructors out there who like participated in these articles about like what they eat in a day to keep their figure. Like, please blow off with that stuff. I think those like articles absolutely need to end, and stop, right? Like stop immediately. So like this like glamorization, the like of how little these people can eat and like be small and like still, I'm like, I look at what these people are eating and I'm just like, how are you? Like, how are you feeling? Tell me about your headache. Tell me how exhausted you are by the end of the day. Tell me about when you stand up, you feel like a little dizzy, like you're orthostatic hypotension. Like, tell me how you're actually feeling day to day. Like, this is not normal that we just glamorize like how little we eat and that it's like this like competition. And the thing is, I brought up the word competition. What I want to say, like in eating disorders and disordered eating, like it does become very competitive. That is a part of the pathology of the disease, is competitiveness, especially when it comes to like competitiveness with like how little you ate compared to somebody else, or, you know, like how long you can go without eating, or how much you can exercise and how little you can eat. Like, it's a very big part of the pathology and the symptomology of eating disorders. And so, like, I look at these, and like I said earlier, like, so many of these behaviors are super normalized as, but they're like eating disorder symptoms. Like, eating very little, skipping meals, ignoring hunger, eating very, you know, glamorizing how little you eat. Like the other thing is like the other big trend on social media when it comes to the almond mom is like keeping the pantry. Oh my God, where am I going? Where am I from? Guys, by the way, nobody is home. I'm recording this dead alone, but I have the time of my life doing this. I do like having guests on these podcasts, but like guests are hard to come by and schedule. So I just like, I need to pop off on myself sometimes. But anyway, I digress. Keeping the pantry. I did it again. Keeping the pantry. I'm going to go very New York. Keeping the pantry. Keeping the pantry stocked with only clean food, right? Quote unquote clean food with like clean ingredients. Like, I could go off on, like, the clean food movement. Like, I just cleaned off some cherry tomatoes to make, oh, shoot, that just reminds me. I have to take the tomatoes out of the oven. But, like, I took some cherry tomatoes to, like, roast some tomatoes and, like, I'm trying to make a tomato sauce to make pizza today. So, like, give me 2 seconds. I'm coming back. I'm gonna take the tomatoes out of the oven so they don't burn and get all burnt. Hey, guys. So, they are not burnt. Anyway. But, like, this idea of, like, only keeping the fridge or the pantry stocked with, like, clean food and, like, these clean ingredients and, like, don't even get me started on the seed oils. Seed oils is going to be a completely – I'm writing this down, guys. Seed oils is definitely going to be something we're going to talk about. We'll talk about clean eating and seed oils, but, like, you don't need to worry about seed oils. You can utilize them in your cooking. We have so much research to back that up. But anyway, like, keeping clean food, like, only fruits and veggies and, like, overpriced, like, organic crackers, which if that's what you like to eat because you like the taste of it, like, be it, go ahead. Do that. But just this, like, idea that, like, food needs to be, like, have a certain way or a certain type of ingredients is, like, this very, like, it's on that border of, like, disordered and, like, non-disordered eating kind of behaviors or thought processes. Of course, there's some foods that I really like that, like, fall into, like, the clean food category. But, like, then we also have, like, Goldfish. And we also have, like, graham crackers. And we also have, like, I don't know what else is in this cabinet. Lots of stuff. So, like, do those fall into the clean food category? Like, no. We also have, like, Ruffle chips. Like, that is not in the clean food category. But, you know, it's not just the behaviors, but it's when it comes to almond moms, right? It's not just about these behaviors. It's not just about these thoughts. It's the projection of this on to other people, which many we find are their daughters, right? And so in, like, the almond mom defense, I totally get it. You just want the best for your kid. And in your mind, like, the best for your child is that they're not fat. Like, because in our society, being fat is not as acceptable as being small, right? Like, there's certain characteristics that people will look at fat people and think, like, oh, they're lazy, or, like, they don't want to work, and, like, they don't want to work on themselves, and they treat themselves poorly, like, which I know many people, and that's not even the truth. Like, it's not even a truth about them. And so, like, we can't make these assumptions based on the way people look. But, like, for the almond mom, like, in their mind, this is, like, the way I can protect my kid, the way I can make my kid healthiest and, you know, look a certain way so they're happy and that they, you know, are successful and that there's one thing that they don't have to worry about. But in many cases, the projection and the disordered eating a parent has does impact kids. And, like, we have studies that really look at, like, the impacts of some of these disordered eating behaviors and even some of these thought processes and how they put your kids at greater risk for disordered eating, psychological and emotional, like, issues, negative interactions between mom and daughter, right? Negative relationships with the kids. And so when we look at this data, it always makes me question, like, what do we want for our kids? What do we want for them? I mean, I have a son now. He's only 1 year old. And, like, even now, like, I have addressed a lot of my own, obviously, I speak about it a lot, my own relationship with food, and, you know, I feel very secure in that, and where I am with my own body and my own, you know, disordered eating history. But I always think it's important for, like, you know, new moms, you know, who have kids, boys or girls, right? Like, this isn't only affecting girls, though, like, we do see a lot more of that spoken about on social media. You know, I think it's always really, you know, what is the solution? And I always like to, you know, try to, at the end of my episodes, like, come up with a solution or what's the recommendation and what do we do as parents, you know, or even if you're not a parent, and you're just like, I was affected by an almond mom for most of my life and maybe even still to today, you know, like, what is the solution? The solution is really looking at ways that we can build healthier relationships with food and our body and recognizing that our body is not the way our body shape and size is not the determining factor of our worth. But for those who are, you know, parents and maybe like going, shoot, I don't want to do this to my kid, or, you know, I have a history of disordered eating or eating disorder and I don't want to pass this on. I mean, development of eating disorders are very, complex. It's multifactorial as to how and why and when somebody develops an eating disorder. But if we can take out some of the elements and some of the risk factors, such as like improving our own relationship with food, and curing, you know, and working on some of our own disordered eating habits or thought processes, that is one way that we can really help ensure that we're not contributing to, you know, an issue. Like, I've had clients before when they were like, I only talk about, you know, I only talk about food positively, and I, you know, never talk about their bodies or anything like that, and they still developed eating disorders. And you're just like, how did this happen? Because they're complex and they're multifactorial, and there's many elements. And just because you were doesn't mean that there were not other influences or other, you know, caretaker influences on body shape and size and food. You know, us moms are not the only ones influencing them. There's other people in their lives. And then there's also society, and there's also social media. But where we go from here, I think it's really important that we all always address our own relationship with food and being deeply honest, our own relationship with our body, and really working on, you know, well, what do I want for myself and what do I want for my kids? You only want what's best for your kids. But when we're wrapped up in diet culture and thin is like the only and best way to be, and only way to make you happy, it's really hard not to project that. So it always starts with from within. How can I make myself the best example possible? And that's really working on improving your relationship with food. And if that is something that, you know, that you have issues with, or even like feel a little diet culture-y sometimes, it's always a great idea to like work that out with someone, whether it's like, you know, an eating disorder therapist, not necessarily you having an eating disorder, but somebody who has that background, or myself, like I'm a registered dietitian. This is what I do. I help people with disordered eating, eating disorders, people with unhealthy relationships with food, whether it's on a spectrum of eating disorders, just to work through that and just really get a good sound. A, some of it is knowledge, but B, also working through some of those, like those thoughts and that misinformation that you may have around food. And so with that, I do want to talk about something I am launching in the middle of October. And I've actually launched this before in the past couple of years ago. I ran it and I came across it the other day and I was like, this was a really great program. And it was a really affordable way for people who wanted to work on their relationship with food. And just, you know, maybe that one-to-one isn't something for them personally. They like something a little bit more self-paced. There is a little bit of one-to-one involved, but it's a 6-week course that I am running. It's a 6-week program, group style. And there is one individual session with me, but the rest of it is online, and there's a group component to it where it's really looking at working on your relationship with food, teaching you real nutrition. This is for a more active population, so there will be a little bit about exercise and, you know, building healthy relationships with exercise and nutrition and food, and really understanding from the core what our body needs, how to fuel it, and how to really understand what some of our negative relationships with food are and how to go about solving that and really repairing it. So that group program is launching in a few weeks, and I'm really excited to get that back up and running. I used to do a lot more group stuff, but I really went into the individual one-to-one, but I'm really excited to bring back some of my revamped group programs, because I've obviously evolved as a practitioner, and it's really fun to see my old work kind of come back alive and be able to just help more people. That's really the goal here. So guys, thank you so much for listening today. I hope you learned about the Almond Mom, its impacts on society, the individual, the children, and how to go about fixing that for ourselves. If you have any questions, always, always, always drop them in my DMs. Or if you want to like get a little bit more personal, you can email me at nutritionbygabby@gmail.com. Till next time, guys, I'm so excited for the fall 2023 schedule lineup coming up. I will see you then.